I'd like to introduce now our guest speaker. I'll tell you a little bit about him. He is, as you know from the invitation sheets you've seen, Lieutenant Colonel Chris Davis, OBE, Royal Marines retired. Chris joined the Royal Marines Band Service in 1975 and after training was drafted to the Royal Yacht Britannia, where he spent 8 years as a member of the band and leader of the orchestra. He completed the bandmaster's course in 1987 and rose through the ranks to become the principal director of music in 2002, and he held that position for 7 years. A period of research in composer and conductor collaboration led to his doctorate in musical arts, to add already to his BA, MMuz and LRAM. His research involved the commissioning and performance of works by new composers, resulting in the production of 5 commercially available CDs of contemporary wind band music performed by the band of Her Majesty's Royal Marines. He retired from the Royal Marines in 2009, and since then he's been busy as a freelance conductor, clinician and adjudicator. He's busy as a performer, conducting the Royal Marines Association Concert Band, playing second violin in the 4-strings quartet, working with former colleagues from the band service.
Good afternoon. My name is Chris Davis. As John said, I was a former principal director of music of the Royal Marines for 7 years, and a bit about that perhaps later on. I've got about 40 minutes, I think John said, and if you have any questions, I'll keep those to the end. I always get one or two, and I've always got one or two favourite questions that people like to ask me, so I've got those in my back pocket ready with the answer. I've called this talk A Life on the Ocean Wave. It's a personal insight into my life in the Royal Marines Band Service. I joined the Royal Marines at 16 in 1975 after a pretty average career at the former King's School, I think it was called, it's now called King's School, it was Montgomery of Alamein Secondary School, Secondary Modern. I think they added the modern bit to make us sound a bit more intellectual. Not sure that was very successful in my case. It was at the time when I joined, it was a step up from sort of Borstal, I think. But we had a very, very good headmaster, Dennis Beecham, who really sorted the place out. He had some marvellous staff, and for me, music was my main interest, and there was a chap there called Arthur Newton, who was as loopy as a box of frogs, but created wonderful footprints for the school, bands, orchestras, choirs. And those ensembles went out into Winchester, went out into Hampshire, and put the school on the map. Quite a clever idea. Wonder what happened with that. A bit more of that. I've got a bit of a... Sorry, Mr. Mayor. I've got a bit of a... Well, it is now. I've got a bit of a gripe with politicians about music and music education, but more of that later. So that's the title. And this is a sort of resume of my career. I joined on the 9th of September 1975 at the age of 16. My mother, Mary, took me to Waterloo Station, put me on a train to Deal from Waterloo East. Do you remember you crossed? Mm-hmm. I waved and smiled. I think my mother was in tears, I'm not sure. But I travelled south to Deal, and we arrived at Deal Station. There were about 45 of us youngsters, and got off the train. And there was a very nice Royal Marine corporal, very smart uniform, who met us on the platform and helped us with our luggage, took us off through the concourse of the station to a 3-ton lorry that was parked outside. We drove into the barracks. We then did a formal thing, which is for Royal Marines, an attestation. This is where you swear allegiance to Her Majesty and her heirs and successors and the government, etc. From that moment, the corporal who's helping us, very nice about it, helping us to get this stuff, changed. And I can, this is nearly 44 years on, 45 years on, I can still remember that corporal's name, Corporal Simmons. I think if I ever met him, we'd have one or two words. But that was the start of my career. And I have an early picture. Here we go. There it is. That's me next to the ambassador in Denmark, in Copenhagen. We visit as a young band, as a young Royal Marine band, we went to Copenhagen, and she's showing us a news article of our performance in the city. And that's me stood next to her. Haven't changed much, really. So, training in Deal lasted 2.5 years. And we took young men from 16 to 18 and a half, and the Royal Marines taught them a musical instrument. I was fortunate. I played the violin. I played the violin at Winchester at school. And so I was sort of halfway there. They taught me the clarinet, but we had odd combinations. We had a cello and euphonium, a string bass and a tuba. When you think about it, it does sound a bit crazy, but actually it's quite normal, because the cello in an orchestra is replicated by a euphonium in a wind band. The tuba is replicated by a string bass in the orchestra. And we, as Royal Marines, provide a double-handed component to musical life. We perform as a military band, one that you will see marching up and down at state occasions and things like that. But we also provide orchestras, and we provide those for dinner, entertainment for officers, and in messes. So we're double, what we call double-handed musicians. At the end of 2.5 years, I was wandering, not wandering, Royal Marines never wander, I was marching across the parade ground in Deal, and a scream from the company office bellowed across the parade ground and said, "Davis, my office." I won't shout, I'm going to lose my voice. I thought I'd done something wrong. I thought the company sergeant major was going to pick me up for a haircut, or I'd not saluted an officer, or something like that. So I was in a bit of fear for my life. Went into the office, and I marched into the office, saluted, and he asked me, "Right, Davis," he said, "I don't know what you've done," he said, "but you have a draft chit here to the Royal Yacht Britannia. You will join her on such and such a date at such and such a time." I think she was in Cowes. I think it was Cowes Week. And, you know, the Royal Yacht used to moor off Cowes for that week. "You will join the Royal Yacht Britannia at that date. And I don't know what you've done. You've obviously crossed somebody's palm with a piece of silver." So I really didn't know what the Royal Yacht was about, or the sort of the credibility that I'd received by that message from the sergeant major. And coming out, one of the instructors, the sergeant instructor, said to me, "You've done really well there, boy," he said. "This would be a great opportunity." And it was. For the next 8 years, I served on Britannia, doing 5 circumnavigations of the world, 2 royal honeymoons, many state visits, Australia, New Zealand, the Pacific. Had a marvellous time, but also learnt a lot about the job as a Royal Marine musician. So there's the old girl. She's now up in Edinburgh. I don't know whether any of you have been to visit her. If you do go to Edinburgh, the city, make a beeline and do that trip. Take about a couple of hours, but you actually get to see everything. I took my family up, my kids, and showed them my bunk that I used to sleep in, and the little metal box that I used to keep everything in. And it was quite emotional, Britannia. that's off South Africa, the Cape. That was in 1994. And we have the Queen on. You can see the Royal Standard at the front and the Lord High Admiral's flag in the middle. One story about those flags. I've got some photographs in a minute of a dinner we did in 1983 in San Francisco. And the Queen had invited the bold and the good people of Hollywood. And President Reagan came on board. And, you know, the crew of Britannia are, they're picked. They're picked people because they never make mistakes. However, that night, the young Matlow who was pulling up the president's flag pulled it up upside down. He lasted about 2 hours. He had to pack his bags and he went on to the escort ship that evening. So, and that's basically what we did on board. That's the band performing a ceremony of beating retreat. The Queen invites guests, or would have invited guests on board Britannia. They would have gone, some would have gone for a reception, some would have gone for dinner. 54 guests, that was the maximum number of guests for dinner, and about 200 for the reception. At the end of the reception, the band would beat retreat. And our final thing, of course, was sunset, where we pulled the Union Jack down. And that was everybody's signal, it was time to leave Britannia. So it never had to change, that ceremony. We did have one director of music, who, a boss, who decided to be a bit clever. He thought he would change the music slightly without telling the master of the household. And the Queen was quite happy to know the routine. She could talk about the music. She could sort of say, oh, now they're going to go into this. And if it changed, she didn't know what was going to happen next. So this director of music had changed the routine. And as a slow march, he used a very popular tune of the day, which was Sailing. Rod Stewart's Sailing, which works as a slow march. It's okay. But of course, the Queen didn't like it at all. In fact, it was one of her, I think, worst tunes that she'd ever witnessed a Royal Marine band playing. The director of music had to speedily be taken to that master's cabin for a dressing down and told that if he ever did that again, he would be out of a job. So live and learn. Don't change things. The passenger. Now, I use this slide because that's how the Royal Yacht crew used to see musicians on board, passengers. When they were working, chipping away, painting and polishing, and a lot of them did that most of the time. If you stood still long enough, you'd be painted or chipped away. We'd be sunbathing in the afternoons because we weren't allowed to play in the afternoons because it kept the watchkeepers who were trying to get to sleep to go on to the early morning watch from sleeping. So that was our excuse. And of course, we then worked in the evening. We started work at about 6:30, 7 o'clock, and we'd finish at midnight having played. So they only saw us sunbathing, but really, we were really working hard. 1981, Charles and Diana's honeymoon. We picked them up in Gibraltar. The yacht had sailed, we picked them up in Gibraltar and we took them through the Mediterranean. And we used to visit the Greek islands. And amazingly, you'd be in the middle of this idyllic scene of islands and beaches, and we'd lower the boats. And within an hour, the paparazzi were there. Now, we hadn't told anybody. It was either local information, people had seen them, or it was before satellites. So, but they were always there within an hour with boats, fast boats, taking pictures. A beautiful lady, and the whole crew fell in love with her. The bottom picture is we dropped them off. We went through the Suez Canal and we dropped them at the bottom of the Suez Canal. And it was President Sadat of Egypt who was president at that time. And untimely, but he was assassinated the week after that. Happy days. The gentleman in the top middle picture is living the dream, I think. He's in the sick bay, and Princess Diana is visiting him in his sick bed. Doesn't look too sick to me. I have to say, I did two royal honeymoons, and they both ended in disaster. So whether it was anything to do with the music, I'm not sure. There's the royal dining room. That's set out for a dinner of about 28, I think. So that's a small private affair. If you go and see it, and people have said this to me, the carpets always look so tatty because they're strips. It's because of the damp. Even though it's inside, the teak deck always allows some moisture through, and the carpet. So what they do when we're at sea and the Queen's not on board, the carpets roll up. So, but it always looks a bit tatty. I know what people mean. This is a welcome in Fiji, one of the Pacific Islands, of course. This was 1982. We did a circumnavigation, and we visited, I think, 13 Pacific Islands on this occasion. One of them was a place called Tuvalu, tiny little island, and. The routine for the band on a trip like this would have been for the band to go ashore at 6 in the morning on an early boat. We'd then be on the island for everything the Queen got involved with. So even though it was a small island, we'd be there for the whole day. At about 4 o'clock, having not been fed or watered, we were pretty thirsty. And we got to what they called their airport, which was a sort of strip in the middle of the island cut between a forest. And there was this sign, a neon sign, that said T-E-A, tea. So we thought, great boys, here we are. Here's a cup of tea. And we legged it across the runway, knocked on the door of this little hut, which was at the bottom of the neon sign. A local gentleman opened the door and said, could we have 24 cups of tea, please? He said, no, no, no. He said, Tuvalu Electrical Authority. And he still didn't offer us a tea. This is also across the Pacific. You'll notice a ship on the left-hand side. That was Britannia's personal tanker, or one of them. The problem with Britannia, she was oil-fired. Steam generator, but oil-fired. So she was the only ship in the fleet. It was commissioned in 1954. She's the only ship in the fleet at this time that burnt this type of fuel. So we had to take our own tanker. And every 3 or 4 days at sea, it took 18 days to cross the Pacific. Every 3 or 4 days, you would need a replenishment at sea and a RAS. So the tankers come alongside. This is going to be probably 7 o'clock in the morning, so the Queen wouldn't see it. Whatever she thought when she pulled the curtains, but there's a tanker there, I don't know. But so we're now refueling, and then once the refueling is done, the tanker would go out of sight below the horizon so that nobody knew there was a tanker there. This picture, you can see the gentleman with the bald head stood here. He's got his back to the tanker. Now, that's key to this picture, because 3 minutes later, the tanker actually collided with Britannia. There's a huge suction caused by the two ships going in the same direction. And she came so close that she hit us. We all scarpered below, and the boss was left there with his tanker coming towards him. But... She bounced. Here's the Ronnie Reagan picture, the dinner in 1983, the one where the flag his flag went upside down. Queen, I always think Queen looks as though she's enjoying that. I think there's times when she doesn't enjoy things. And here are some of the guests you might spot. We've got Bob Hope, bottom right, Frank Sinatra and Nancy Sinatra, top right. And one of the Foxes, I think, left. And Tracy, was she a tennis player? Austin, Tracy Austin. At the end of this dinner, normally, as I said, the last thing was a beat retreat, which we did. We'd finished, we got back on board, we were getting changed, and we were then going to go ashore into San Francisco. And a message came down from the Royal Apartments from one of the Queen's equerries, who said, "Gentlemen, the Queen would like you to come play a game for about 20 minutes," she said. "Frank Sinatra would like to do a set." So we sort of ummed and ahed, quickly got dressed again, went back up. And of course, we'd not rehearsed. He had brought his own MD with him, who had all the dots. He handed them out, and we spent 20 minutes with the great man entertaining. This is us at the end. This is the final bit. The bald gentleman playing the piano has kicked our piano player, who is this gentleman here, looking a bit miffed, off the piano. So that was my yacht career. 8 years on board Britannia, and loved every minute of it. And then it sort of dawned on me, actually, I'd better get a real job, you know, in the band service. And so I went for promotion. I went through lots of courses, and the Royal Marines train you for everything. There is nothing that you're going to face in your career that they're not going to train you for. That's their ticket. So I spent a year doing a bandmaster's course to become a bandmaster. I was then very fortunate. I was asked, went and did an Admiralty interview board at HMS Sultan in Gosport, and got a commission and became a Lieutenant Royal Marines. It was about this time that I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, and it was touch and go whether they were going to keep me on. I remember it to this day, being marched into an Admiralty medical board, and there was an Admiral, a Commander, and a Major from the Royal Marines sat on this board, very imposing, and a Chief Petty Officer, Medic, who was a sort of Sergeant Major, and the Admiral said, "Right, read out the regulation, Chief," and the Chief read this regulation, P7R permanent, which meant discharge. Sure, that was the end of me. Type 1, gone. And so that was a bit of a shock, because it was the first time it had ever been mentioned in any discussion with anybody that I talked to. And for some reason, the Major who sat across the desk said to me, I was a colour sergeant at the time, he said, "Colours, would you consider staying if the Admiral would allow that to happen?" I said, "Well, of course, sir, you know, served for 18 years, I want a career." So he said, "Right, well, we'll suspend this this medical board, give us half an hour." And apparently, and I've spoken to this Major, I met him, he was a brigadier at the time, but so he did well. He said he rang my headquarters, Royal Marines HQ in Portsmouth, talked through the case, and they agreed that I could serve as long as I had medical support in a unit. So it meant never going operational, but it meant I could stay in the Royal Marines. And if it wasn't for that gentleman, I'd probably be selling homebrew kits or something like that. I don't know. So I've met him since, and I've thanked him. So the rest is history. I got my commission. I got my promotion. And in 2002, I was promoted to Lieutenant Colonel and became the principal director of music of the Royal Marines. Great honour. I was the seventh in line from a gentleman. Some of you might remember a gentleman called Sir Vivian Dunn, who was a principal director of music, the first one. So to follow a great list of musicians was a great honour for me. And to run the five bands, to start my career in charge of 400 musicians and retire in after 7 years as the principal director, still with 400 musicians, to me, that was me having done the job. Music's one of those things that people like to cut, even in the armed forces. Well, what purpose do you give? What good are you? And I can say, as principal director of music, I deployed over 200 musicians at various times to Afghanistan, to Kosovo, to the Falkland Islands. Operationally, that meant they went, as you might remember the word, stretcher bearers. We now call it casualty handlers. So in Afghanistan, a band would deploy and they would support 3 Commando Brigade, the Royal Marine Commandos, in looking after the casualties on the battlefield and force protection, guarding the ambulances and the helicopters that landed to take those casualties away. And the ticket is if you can get them from the battlefield back to a hospital, Camp Bastion in Afghanistan, within an hour, you've got a hope of keeping that guy, that lady, alive. So a very important role, and one that probably gets missed. Mm-hmm. That's me in action in the Royal Albert Hall. The Royal Marines perform at the Royal Albert Hall every year, a thing called the Mountbatten Festival of Music, a mass bands event. It is now a West End show, lighting, dancing, singers, everything. It's wonderful, and we do 3 nights now, set out. Another one, a bit more moody, and you might notice the moustache. I shaved that off and gave me 20 years, somebody said. It wasn't my wife. And there's the mass bands. In 2007, the Queen graciously awarded me an OBE, other bogus efforts. and it really was. I was the head of the organisation, but the guys on the ground at the coalface are the people that you really need watching your back, and they did. What happened next? That's always a bit of the story that I like to tell. I retired in 2009 after 34 years in the Royal Marines. And it took me probably 18 months to get the organisation out of my system to move on. I'm sure if you've been with somewhere so long, it, when you see something on, in my case, it was seeing things on television that actually 12 months earlier I would have been at. So it did take me about 18 months to 2 years. I'm completely normal now. I'm a civilian. I do remember going to my medical surgery and queuing up. And, I used to queue up in the Royal Marines, but not very often. I queued up, and as we're getting nearer to the counter, the shutters came down. And it wasn't the fact the shutters came down. It was the fact nobody had said, actually, as I joined the queue 10 minutes earlier, we're going to shut now. You're probably too late. They just shut the... And I just went off on one. And I think it was something to do with the fact that I expected it to be provided to me as it had been in the naval service, but it wasn't. So that I'd never been a civilian. I was 16 when I joined. Never had a proper job. So it was a bit of a learning experience. Anyway, what did I do? I had one or two things. I used to conduct brass band, the Otterbourne Brass Band. Some of you might have heard of that organisation. I did that for 9 years. Loved every minute of it. giving something back. And then I had a phone call from a chap in Yorkshire who said, would you like to, sorry for the accent's right. You're Lancashire or somewhere, aren't you? Durham. Oh, yeah. A bit close. I'll do it in my Hampshire accent. Yes. He said, where would you like to come and conduct our brass band? And it, you know, I was conducting Otterbourne. I thought, well, not really. It's a long way to go. I said, well, could you tell me which band it is? He said, well, it's the Brighouse and Rastrick. Oh. Brass band. Yes. Which is the world famous. They have the world famous. They had a single that they always used to tell me that they got to number one with, which was the Florins. They never got to number one. They only got to number two. And I used to give them that back. But I did 2 years in Brighouse, commuted, loved everyone. Great musicians, some great trips. We went to Northern Ireland, we did tours of Wales, Scotland. Great bunch of people who used to play hard but work hard at their music, and fabulous musicians. So I did that for 2 years. I came home and I got a phone call from my wife. My wife is a teacher, Helen, from her head teacher. And he said, would you come and consider looking after a young lad that we have a bit of a problem with? So immediately the alarm bells are ding, 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 ding. I said, well, it's not something I've ever done. Probably not. And the more I'm thinking about it, something made me at least go down there and meet this young lad. And as I got to the school, the headmaster was coming out of his office and he brushed past me. He said, thanks for coming, Mr. Davis. He's in there. And he kept going. So I tentatively opened the door and this young 9-year-old was sat in the head teacher's chair with his feet on his desk. 9. So he looks up at me, said, you're frightened of me, aren't you? And I said, well, actually, I don't know you. It's the first time we met, so I can't say I'm frightened of you. I said, but you can take your feet off the table and treat me with a bit of respect. And it was like a flash of lightning that made him realise that probably he wasn't going to be able to push me quite as far as he perhaps pushed others. And he stood up, came around the table, shook my hand, didn't look me in the eye, and we had words about that later. And there was something about this young lad. He was in foster care, terrible childhood, lived in Portsmouth. Mum and dad were always in and out of prison. His main purpose in life was to provide tea at the end of the day. So he'd go out of the house in the morning at 7:30, and he was expected to come back with tea that evening. And if he didn't, he was beaten up. And that was less than 12 miles from where I lived. So I was oblivious to this. And I spent the next year with this young man, and we formed a relationship. It wasn't always plain sailing. He would push and push, and then realise that was much and step back. And he was feral, but he was clever. He was bright, had no education, was in a class of bright children in a good, an outstanding primary school. And was just out of his depth. And bit by bit, I used to take my violin and play to him, and which he loved. He thought that was a marvellous. I said, well, you could do this, you have to start somewhere. He said, oh, no, I can't do it. Never achieved anything. Anyways, we spent a year, and in this year, I taught him the violin, and he achieved his grade one with merit. The first thing he'd ever done, achieved, and it gave him a start. I don't know where he is now. He went to senior school. He used to come back and see me because I stayed on at school and looked after other emotional literacy, they call it. It's why youngsters have feelings of anger and why they punch somebody, and it's to do with that. So I got a qualification from it, and my children are amazed. because I was never like that with it. What do I do now? I conduct the Royal Marines Association concert band, and you have a flyer. We're doing a concert in Chandler's Ford at the end of this month on the 27th. It's a band formed of old Royal Marines musicians who get together once a week and we go out and perform for charity. The band's been running about 10 years and we've raised over £120,000. So really giving something back, which is what I like to do and what life should be. Life's been good to me and I'm able to give back. I'm also a clerk of the governing body at Eastleigh College. So I run the governing body. I organise it, I recruit it, I tell them basically what to do. They seem to like it. And it's something totally different and a good place. Eastleigh College might not be the academic great exponents of academia, but it looks after young people who perhaps have gone through their school life and even perhaps missed out on opportunities or not had that opportunity in the first place, and Eastleigh gives that back to them. So I enjoy working there. I play in the string quartet, and that's me. Are there any questions? Thank you.
Totally irrelevant. Yes. Who does the cartoons?
A friend of mine. When I've done one or two talks. It's not something I know colleagues who have gone and make a career of it, and it's not something that I enjoy telling the story, and I always are amazed by why anybody would want to hear a story about what I did as a job. But I got a friend to do the cartoons for me.
And one more.
Yes.
You were going to lay into Hampshire County Council.
I was. No. Mr. Michael Gove, his curriculum misses out on music.
Absolutely.
And to me, it's a no-brainer. It provides discipline. To do music well, or even, reasonably well, you need to be disciplined to practice. And that those life skills, music is able to help. And I've seen it with the young lad that I looked after. He had no discipline. And I'm not, academics always get a bit twitchy when I talk about discipline because they think I'm talking about military discipline. Totally different thing. This is about self-discipline, getting up early. It's good ethic. It's a life skill. I just think maths and English obviously is important, but it's not the be and end all. And if schools are now, I know Hampshire Music do a wonderful job, but it's all about music. It seems to me that in the future, the only musicians we will have will be people that come from families who have the opportunity to provide that extra. That's the only, orchestra is going to be made up of people that could actually be doctors, lawyers, and they're the arty ones who want to be musicians. But it just seems to me that it's a no-brainer. We can all sing. It doesn't cost anything. It costs one good teacher. And I've seen it with choirs of young people that, come from pretty, my wife teaches in Thornhill in Southampton, It's the Beirut of Southampton. and she has a choir of 30 to 40 young people who love every minute of it. And she sings the right repertoire. They go and perform in the local community. No brain. But anyway, that's my... Sorry, back.
Do you remember what the Queen said to you when you received your...
No. People have asked me. This is the one in my back pocket. Yeah. No. I remember, because it's a bit of a rigmarole, you're briefed on everything, and there's lots of people being awarded. I was awarded the OB the same day as Stephen Gerrard, the footballer. Mm-hmm. He was about three in front of me. So I was just spellbound by the fact that he was there. Forgot all about the briefing. But you go up, and she's shaking your hand as long as she's talking to you. And then when she's finished, you feel this slight push, which means time's up.
That's all I remember.
Everybody says the same thing.
Yeah.
You ask anyone who receives any form of award from the league, and none of them can remember anything
no.
he said.
No, shut us down. I can't remember. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, that's right, in the village hall.
Well, not in the village hall, it's the other side of the motorway. And I used to be clerk to the governors there.
Oh, okay.
And
no, I'll tell you where you're talking about. It's College House, it's called. That is part of Eastleigh College. We now take 12 residential students. We've taken over that building, the building that you're talking about.
Oh, right.
Yes, at Compton, across the bridge.
Over the bridge.
Yes, that's right, on the left-hand side.
Yes.
Yeah, so Eastleigh College runs a residential, it's basically offering them accommodation and their special educational needs children.
Yes.
They come into college for education. Yeah, great place. Yeah.
But they don't have money for music.
No.
They have to raise the money
yes.
for music.
Yeah, that's
which
right.
Which is
mm.
very
sad. Yeah, yeah.
Mm. Just to give you a smile.
Same with my granddaughter in Sussex.
Was very, very deaf. And he'd fallen over. And he'd got a sore knee. I said, oh, what have you done? Oh, I fell over, he said. So I said, oh, you were a silly sausage, weren't you? So he said, no, silly pineapple.
Right, well, if there are no more questions, I'm going to play for you, if you give me about 4 minutes. That's the one.